Members, we will call this meeting of the House Commerce Committee to order. We now have a quorum. We can proceed with the business of the committee. Representative Anderson, did you get a chance to look at the minutes from the last meeting?
Good, yeah, I can.
Representative Anderson moves approval of the minutes from the last meeting. Is there any discussion, comments, questions? Seeing none, those in favor of the adoption of the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Thank you, Representative Anderson. With that, we will jump into the agenda. Representative Baker, I will move House File 3368 so it is in front of the committee. Representative Baker, welcome, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Also, if I may, Mr. Chair, we've got an amendment, too, that should have been included. I'd like to have that included, if I could, now to put it in the form we'd like to talk about.
I will move the A16-1011 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Baker, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members, for the opportunity to talk to you about an idea that came from a constituent of mine back in Wilmer talking about taxes. And we were talking about the gas tax and the debate that goes on that we've been dealing with down here for quite some time. And the question was asked, well, gee, what do we even pay now for gas tax? And I will bet that most people in the room, if you didn't have this piece of paper in front of you, wouldn't know what you're paying on a gas tax. But I think it's important that we tell our folks that are paying it every single day when they buy a gallon of gasoline how much it is. And I think the Petroleum Marketing Association, and I worked on this with those folks, and they've been trying to figure out a way to do this for a while, and I guess we came to the best conclusion. Let's put a sticker on the gas dispensing unit that weights and measures go and visit every single year, or I think it's about every 18 months. They're there anyway. They're checking the gallonage on the proper dispensing proportions, and I think this is a really good transparency bill that tells people how much you're already paying for a gallon of gas and the portion that is taxed. You know, you don't see when a gallon of gas is displayed at $1.85 right now up on the sign, it doesn't say includes tax or plus tax. The gas is always included, but when you go to a hardware store and buy a hammer, you know exactly what the tax is on the receipt. So this is a really good bill that just starts to educate everybody about already what we are paying for taxes. It's between 25% and 35% of the price of gallon of gas right now is taxes. I think it's important to tell people how much already is going towards our constitutionally dedicated road fund. And again, it's 48.2 cents or 46.9, I think, excuse me, but this is a tax sticker that will include federal and state taxes. If there's a change to it, if there ever will be a change, that would change as the process goes with the weights and measures. They would just be updated the stickers. They would start putting the new stickers on, but it doesn't all of a sudden create a big wave of problems because we're a little bit out of date with the tax. I think it's just a matter of informing the public what that is, and that's what this is intended to do, Mr. Chair. And I'm standing for questions. I don't have any testifiers as well.
That is very nice, Representative Baker. Representative Swedzinski has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to appreciate you carrying this bill. It's a very interesting concept. Representative Greg Davids was out of the room, but he wanted me to ask about if this would affect gambling or things at the pump at all, or
gambling at
At the pump.
Representative Baker,
Mr. Chair, and no, there's nothing to do with that. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Baker, and I see that there's a letter in our packets from the Minnesota Service Station and Convenience Store Association.
Correct.
I don't know that anybody's opposed to this. If there is, if anybody wants to speak for or against the bill, please come down. I know I had several people stop me in the hall yesterday and today and say nice things about it. So I haven't heard anybody. Usually they find me if they're opposed to it, but I'm not aware of any opposition. Members, any other questions? Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, Mr. Chair, it's not necessarily for the author, but did we not at one time have something like this in Minnesota? I do remember seeing, or maybe I was in a different state when I was filling up, but I do think Minnesota at one time had the exact breakdown that Representative Baker is referring to, and I don't know if there's anybody else smarter than me that knows that.
Representative O'Driscoll, Representative Baker, do you have an answer?
I just have an answer that I am smarter than Representative O'Driscoll, but I don't have. I did hear that there was about two other states that actually do have this around. I couldn't tell you what the states are, but thank you for that opportunity there. Thanks.
Anybody else want to speak for or against the bill? Any questions? Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 3368, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Baker. Thank you, members.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I can't believe Representative David's voting for that, but hey.
Will somebody please call the sergeant? Representative Petersburg, if you want to come down. Representative Petersburg, I will move House File 3187 so that it is before the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank the committee for hearing this bill. This was a very kind of interesting bill that was an idea given to me by a constituent back home that works for Federated Insurance, so he's used to dealing with risk and liabilities and so forth. And he is very much aware of a current rash of identity theft issues that are occurring in the United States, and primarily reason for identity theft is to acquire assets and funding and so forth. For that, and currently we have on statute the ability for individuals to freeze their credit through the three primary agencies that control credit histories with a fee of $5. But he said the big difference is that currently today the identity theft is occurring more and more for underage minors, children, their identity, because who checks their kids' credit scores? I mean, they just don't do it. And so oftentimes when a child turns 16, 17, and think about going to school and applying for loans, they realize that their credit has been ransacked and has been destroyed, and they didn't know anything about it. And it could have occurred more than once during that time. And so there are many states that have allowed parents to be able to put that freeze on their children's credit history. And I think there are some handouts in your packets that indicate some background information about this. He was unable to be here today, but he did send a letter that I would like to read, and I believe some people from the Credit Consumer Debt Industry Association have some other concerns with the bill that we'll be glad to work with. But if I could read that statement, I'd appreciate that.
Representative Petersburg, go ahead.
Thank you. Members of the committee, the purpose of my statement today is to request your help with protecting the children of Minnesota from the consequences of identity theft. Children under the age of 18 are 51 times more likely to become victims of identity theft than their parents. Out of a representative sample of more than 40,000 juveniles, 10.2% or 4,311 kids fell prey to some sort of identity theft or fraud, compared to just 0.2% of adults in 2009 and 2010. These statistics are astonishing and likely much worse in 2016 compared to 2010. Instances of identity and credit theft continue to rise. Countless financial, medical, and retail institutions' databases have been and continue to be breached, compromising ours and our children's Social Security numbers, birth dates, and addresses. The real danger of identity theft is the risk that one's credit will be stolen and misused. The consequences of credit theft are crushing. Most instances of credit theft of children are not discovered until the child reaches the age of 18. They typically discover they've been victimized when they apply for a student loan, purchase their own cell phone plan, or apply for their first credit card. Their credit may have been compromised and recompromised for years, unbeknownst to them, because this is the first time they are applying for credit themselves. A recent survey by Javelin Strategy and Research showed that these crimes, when discovered, took an average of 334 days to detect, and 17% of children were victimized for a year or longer. These statistics indicate that child identity theft is both more difficult to detect and more expensive to resolve than adult identity theft. Most states, including Minnesota, have provisions in place to allow a security freeze for an adult's credit file. In our state, it costs $5 per bureau, so $15 total for TransUnion, Equifax, and Experian. These cheap insurance and peace of mind. When the freeze is in place, a secure PIN number is issued, which can be used to lift the security freeze when needed, in other words, for applying for credit, securing a loan, etc. Security freezes are nearly 100% effective against credit theft. Many people subscribe to credit monitoring services, which only alert the person after the fact that the credit has been compromised. Security freeze prevents it from happening in the first place. I have had a security freeze on my credit files for years, and the peace of mind it affords cannot be overstated. I wish I could do more to protect my children, but in Minnesota, I cannot. In recent years, more states have been stepping up to allow parents to put a security freeze in place for their minor children, thereby providing protection from identity theft and credit abuse. More information can be found at the National Conference of State Legislatures. Let's work together to help Minnesota be one of the leaders in passing a bill to protect our children, their identities, and their future. Thank you in advance for your time and consideration, Matthew Sinat. And with that, I conclude my testimony, and thank you for doing that. I believe there is somebody here from the consumer data industry that wishes to testify too.
Members, any questions? Seeing no questions, if there is somebody that wants to come down and testify either for or against the bill, you're welcome to it.
Well, maybe they weren't able to.
Seeing nobody coming down, I will renew my motion that House File 3187 be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion passes. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. You're on your way to civil law.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, committee.
Representative Loon. Representative Loon, if you want to go ahead and move House File 3489, I would appreciate it.
I would, Mr. Chair. Where are we moving it to the General Register?
I believe so.
All right. Very well. I would move that House File 3489 be referred to the General Register.
Please proceed.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I might, I have to, just if I have a brief moment of personal indulgence.
Yes, you may.
I noticed that I have a fellow member of my Eden Prairie AM Rotary Club here, and with our Rotary Youth Exchange student here with us, Jeannie Zeta and Art. And sorry to embarrass you, but I don't often look up into the audience and see Rotary members or our exchange student here, so I'm pleased to see you.
Thank you, Representative Loon, and welcome to the committee. Nice to have you here. With that, Representative Loon, please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, 3489 is a Commerce Department technical proposal. Two sections, and they both deal with changing existing Minnesota law to National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC, Model Acts. The corrections in them update the circumstances in which a health or fraternal insurance company would have to file a report related to its risk-based capital. And the language in the bill comes directly from the NAIC model, creates a second circumstance in which a fraternal or health company would have to file a risk-based capital plan. So in other words, unless a company is having a negative result or is in a dangerous capital position, really this language is not going to impact Minnesota insurers. So Section 1 deals with health companies. It's an accreditation standard for the Commerce Department. And last summer, the NAIC informed the Commerce Department that four states, including Minnesota, were not within compliance with the model, and that could impact our state's next accreditation review, which is scheduled for 2017. Section 2 of the bill, which deals with fraternal companies, it's not an accreditation standard, but the language does conform to the NAIC model. And I'm pleased to have Mr. Brickwetty from the department here to respond to any questions.
Thank you, Representative Loon. Mr. Brickwetty, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Peter Brickwetty from the Department of Commerce. Happy to answer members' questions. I simply would say I'd like to thank Bob Johnson from the Insurance Federation, Robin Rohn from MIFC, and Catherine Commit from the Council of Health Plans, who helped coordinate it there. Their members' review of the proposal prior to session. I would note for Representative Davids, there's no increase in continuing education requirements whatsoever in this bill, and happy to answer members' questions.
Thank you, Mr. Brickwitty. Members, any questions? I think we might have a couple. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe to Mr. Brickwitty. I read the entire bill twice. And Mr. Mayor, this is more for Mr. Don't we normally, as a committee, and we've got Chair Atkins here, don't we normally just take NAIC models and just adopt them?
Aye. Representative Davids, that's, I think that that has generally been the thought with the committee.
And just, I just wanted to verify with Mr. Brickwitty, this was not brought to us by Alec, was it?
Mr. Brickwitty?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any Commerce Department employees named Alec, but I could check the roster when I get back to the office.
Mr. Brickwitty, nicely
Thank
done.
Thank you.
Representative Swudzinski?
No, I'm good.
Representative Sanders?
Yes. I don't know how I could follow that up.
Well, and representative members of the committee and people in the audience, I would like to point out Representative Davids is looking rather spiffy today with his Bemidji bow tie.
It's me, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. I know. It sings. Any other questions, members? Anybody else want to testify for or against the bill? Seeing none, Representative Loon will give you the final word.
I thank you, members. I appreciate your support. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 3489 be recommended to be placed on the general register.
All those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Loon. Thank you, Mr. Brickwitty.
Next item is Representative Lean's bill, House File 1798. And Representative Lean, I'm going to ask you before I move your bill, I'm going to ask you what your desire is with respect to 1798. But as we had a discussion about whether we were going to move that or whether it was going to be for informational purposes, can you clarify what the plan is?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. I would request this to be an informational hearing.
Okay. Well, with that, the item is before us, House File 1798. Representative Lean, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The need for House File 1798 was brought to my attention by Joe Richardson of Gaming Studios. Mr. Richardson is a paddle wheel game designer. In 2012, electronic simulated paddle wheels were authorized in the Viking Stadium bill. House File 1798 continues that work and would reduce the number of tickets players use for paddle wheel games without tables and make tickets electronic for paddle wheel games that are used with tables. The bill also provides the Gambling Control Board with the ability to further regulate paddle wheel games. It is not my intention to expand gaming with this bill. Paddle wheel games are charitable games. Mr. Richardson has been in contact with Tom Baird of the Gambling Control Board in drafting this bill. Allied Charities of Minnesota is in support of the bill. Mr. Richardson and I have opened dialogue with Minnesota Indian Gaming Association to make further changes to the bill, which would eliminate the potential of paddle wheel games from becoming player-activated games and to assure the social aspect continues with paddle wheel games. If Minnesota Indian Gaming Association has additional concerns or recommendations, Mr. Richardson and I welcome further discussion, and it is my hope we can resolve these concerns this summer. The proposed changes to the bill, they are highlighted in your packet. We're hoping to get a copy of the changes, which would have been through an author's amendment highlighted in red. However, it's black and white, so some things there. Members certainly welcome to ask questions about that. But they were drafted by Mr. Richardson and Mr. Barrett to bring additional regulation, clarification of how the new electronic systems would function, consistency with other existing electronic gaming statutes and rules, as well as to maintain the social aspect of paddle wheel games. And with that, Mr. Chair, I will turn it over to Mr. Richardson to walk through the more technical aspects of the bill.
Thank you, Representative Lean. Mr. Richardson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for holding this hearing. I preface my remarks with an observation that over the last 20 years, charitable gaming in inflation adjusted is down 43%. That's 20 years inflation adjusted, and it's down 11% in nominal dollars. So as a game designer, I'm sort of feeling as though we've let charitable gaming down a bit. But the design for the original paddle wheel with table, which is the only table game in Minnesota bars, and I must say, I like wheels because they resolve slowly, and people actually get up out of their chairs sometimes when their number is coming close, especially with the large wheels that have a slow tail end to them. The table that is played with the game is one of the more social games out there because people can meet each other. They're all focused on the wheel, and it's just a social type of game with a operator. So in 1985-1986, I designed the original Minnesota Tri-Wheel with a table. Players approach that table right now. They buy chips with cash. The chips are provided to the player. The cash is dropped into a double-locking drop box on the table. With the chips, the players buy as many tickets as they wish to bet on a forthcoming spin. And this is the original sort of ticket, a colored ticket, four tickets here attached to a page, and it would be a book of these tickets, so that all in serial number order, so you could see how many, the volume of sales by how many serial numbers were dispensed with for every spin. So the tickets gave us a profit and loss indicator on the game. The chips, we could also tell profit and loss from chip flow, and then we could tell profit and loss from cash. We had a triad accounting system going here, so that if one was off, didn't agree with the other two, we could kind of ferret out where our problem may have lied. The tickets over the years got very expensive. At any rate, you buy your tickets, you place your tickets, you have that visual piece in front of you, you will see a slotted table. It has 117 slots in the old table. And you take your ticket and you place it in slots associated with where you want to wager. You mark your ticket before you place it in the slots with your unique identifier. You could mark it with some other player's unique identifier if you want to give them that bet. But it just helped the operators know who to pay off it when a win came. So once the table, people are done placing their tickets, the wheel operator calls for a spin, closes the table for any more placement of tickets. All tickets that have been purchased have to be placed, and the wheel operator spins. The wheel goes for revolutions plus and stops. Then the wheel operator extracts from the slots the losing tickets, tears them up, then extracts the winning tickets, writes the winning number and the amount on the back of each of the winning tickets. It can be quite the job. It's really something to watch these people do this quickly. They're very, it's amazing. I'm not sure I could do it. So they pay off with chips. So you see, we reduce the amount of cash that goes back and forth across the table by using the chips. When a player is done playing, they want to leave the table, they take their chips up to the jar cashier, and they're redeemed there. So again, we can tell profit and loss from chip flow. Now, the issues with this bill are efficiency, security, accountability, and ease of regulation. The efficiency part comes in, these tickets have become 2.6 cents a piece. They're only made for Minnesota wheel with table games. So they're really quite expensive. They've gone up in price all this time. If we could reduce having a ticket spent with each and every wager and go to a system where we have all the wagers a player wants to make on one ticket for up to 10 consecutive spins, we can reduce that paper by over 90%. And on the table game, if we can reduce making a table with slots, 117 slots in it, the tickets going, it would be lovely to build. I mean, it's a beast, the table right now. There's no need to use tickets anymore because you could use virtual tickets or chips. And a player could approach the table by decide, oh, I'd like to play, and maybe the operator would say, you ever played before? And they say, well, no, I haven't. Well, you know, here's my advice. Maybe you should start with 10-cent chips to get your feet wet. Slide me $5, and I'll give you 50, I'll issue 50 10-cent chips. Now, they're virtual. There's no cost associated. So it doesn't matter whether it's a 10 cent, a quarter, or a 50 cent, whereas now you've got 2.6 cents associated with every bet, and so you can't do 10 cents. I mean, you know, you go broke in a hurry on that. So they place their chips by moving them. Each player's stack of chips is of the same, all their chips are of the same value. The computer knows their chips from anybody else's chips. So they move their chips onto the digital surface table, which is like a large iPad. And when the wheel operator still uses a wheel operator takes the cash. When the wheel operator is done, the wheel operator closes the table. It's locked down. No moving of tickets or anything. It's closed down. And the signal is sent with an accounting record of that table, so should the lights go off, we can repair the amount of value to every player on a table. The accounting goes up, and the random number comes down, and the wheel goes into a spin, and after it's done spinning, the losing wagers, the chips expand, they go poof, the winning ones expand and rack up and go over to the player's home stack again. And we know every bet by every player. We know exactly what the cash bank should be at any given time. And that's security. And accountability is that an organization could be out in the parking lot and check what the cash bank should be coming through a secured back door of our system and go in and count the bank. And the bank ought to be just what the system says it is. So accountability is reached by having a time frame where it's immediate. Then there's ease of regulating. Well, any regulatory official can go in to the system and find out what the cash bank should be, what the activity of the night has been, and check. Do a spot audit. It's all there, the records. We reduce, these tickets are now printed in Nebraska and shipped in to Minnesota. Tons of tickets coming into Minnesota for milliseconds of play. They come into a distributor's warehouse, they're logged in off the carrier to there, then they're logged out from the distributor's warehouse to the organization's warehouse. Then they're logged from that warehouse to the site. Then they're either destroyed or they're logged for audit and taken standing for audit for a couple of years, whatever the limit is. At least the winning tickets are. And the losing ones are destroyed. There is so much a better way of doing this these days. We have electronic wheels in law, simulated wheels. We just need the regulatory basis for this and some good accounting backbone. But if you wish, Mr. Chairman, I'll take you through section by section quickly what we have.
Well, let's look to the members. Is there anybody? Most members come prepared and have read through it, so is there anybody that needs them to go through it section by section for? I think what we should do is we'll see if there's questions for you or for Representative Lean at this point, and then see if there's others that want to testify. I have one quick question. I don't see anybody on the list yet, but you're talking about obviously a virtual or electronic format. I'm probably using the wrong word for it, but the handle or the amount wagered, does it go up when you go with virtual versus the old-fashioned? You know what my question is? Is it, because I'm assuming there's time limitations and that's built into it, but is the amount of wagering go up when you do it virtually rather than an old-fashioned format, the traditional way?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. There are no virtual table games in charitable gaming. So I guess I wouldn't know if you put a virtual table in, if it would go up.
Representative Lynch?
Mr. Chairman, I do see Allied Charities in the crowd. They may be able to provide some more technical clarity to your question.
And the other question, and maybe while they're coming down, if they want to talk about that, but how much space do you need to, I picture a big wheel, but could it fit on a gas pump or something, for example?
Worth it.
We just like to see if Representative David's paying attention or not. In all seriousness, I don't know what size it would be.
Mr. Chairman, the wheels out there right now are 40 to 42 inch.
Yes.
And the reason they are large as mechanical wheels is because you try to make them heavy so that they have a sort of sweet slowdown period where the numbers go slowly around. A lighter wheel actually goes fast. You've probably seen them meat raffles and they stop, boom. But the larger gaming wheels, part of the fun is watching your chance coming close to the top, and then
mine goes right by.
That's where you break the back of chairs, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Richardson. Mr. Lutton, do you want to provide some of that technical? You're welcome to talk about other topics as well or other related, but you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Al Lund, the Executive Director of Allied Charities of Minnesota. And I think that what your question was asking, would I be able to bet more electronically than I can on a manual?
That's essentially it, yeah.
No. In fact, as I understand it, it would be a decrease that you would be able to bet on each spin of the wheel on the electronic than on the current manual. But I am here today to speak in favor of House File 1798. We view this bill as an evolution, not a revolution. We do not view it as an expansion of gambling. Manual tri-wheels and tables are currently allowed and in use in Minnesota. Some people have suggested that this is our way of bringing in casino-style games into our bars, and that is not true. It is an update of a manual version. Mr. Richardson has worked with interested parties to allay concerns, two of those which were decreasing the amount of the bet on each weight, each spin of the wheel, and that no possibility of player-initiated play in this example. The electronic version would give the Gambling Control Board live access to data, and that would only increase the integrity of our games, and we live by our integrity. We need to be allowed to upgrade technology when it's available. We're not looking at having to be able to do this off-site. We believe in sites. We believe that's how our game should be played. We're asking for approval of an upgrade to a tool that's already in use in our sites. So I do thank you for your time, and I would certainly stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Lund. Are there questions for Mr. Lund? Thanks again.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else I should have? Anybody else that desires to be heard with respect to this bill?
This isn't being used to pay for the stadium.
Are any other questions from members?
Does this affect my cake?
Good afternoon and welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John McCarthy. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. Our association represents 10 of the 11 federally recognized tribes within Minnesota. These tribes are geographically located mostly in rural communities throughout the state. I'm here today to address our association's concerns regarding HF 1798, a bill requesting changes in state law that would allow what we see as a complete change in the paddle wheel game. While we understand the intent of this bill is to help the bars and restaurants and Minnesota charities prosper, we also want to do well. We also want them to do well. But we have to look at each and every new proposal that would expand gambling in Minnesota. Whenever any gambling proposal is being considered, we not only look at the proposal from its impact today, but also, and more importantly, is where it could go tomorrow. With the high-tech internet world we live in, the simple change of a chip turns a seemingly harmless device into a functioning slot machine. We have seen so many non-controversial proposals that at face appear to make some simple changes that make the game more efficient, glitzier, better regulated, and more customer friendly. While the original intent of these requests indeed may be to do all of those things, the reality is that approving such proposals, we are edging closer and closer to something that has been turned down by this legislature every time it has been brought up, full-blown slots and bars. From what we see at this point, this request will change the culture of the paddle wheel, increase the number of electronic devices in bars, increase the volume of betting at a much faster rate than the traditional paddle wheel allows, create incentive for much higher wages per bet. In addition to those concerns, we have a lot of questions about the design of the game and the close proximity it appears to have with the game of roulette. We have additional concerns regarding technical aspects of the device, but I won't bore you with that today. We appreciate your holding this hearing as an informational hearing, as that is what we feel is most practical at this stage. We hope that the manufacturer will be willing to meet with us over the next few months so we can educate ourselves on this proposal and draw our conclusions from a much more knowledgeable position. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for your time. I'm happy to answer any questions I can.
And thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Are there questions for Mr. McCarthy at this point? Okay, thanks again. And Mr. Grassel, welcome back.
Thank you. Jake Grassel with Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we as well have grave concerns about this bill. I was speaking to somebody recently, and they said, I don't know why we need to reinvent the wheel with this bill. The pun was intended on their part, and I thought about that at first, and I suppose they are reinventing the wheel in Minnesota with this. But the way I looked at it, and as I did some research into this and the technology into this, we do have long-term fears on this new technology as presented to us, that this isn't necessarily reinventing the wheel, but rather is adopting a form and function that is occurring every day in Las Vegas, and that is online roulette. We do believe that this is the beginning of the game of online roulette, potentially later down the road, player-initiated in bars, and we do have concerns about that. We appreciate the developer's enthusiasm for his product. He came down here, was very enthusiastic. We do have some concerns. I know one comment he made, and I don't know if it was intentional, but 10 cents at a time, you can lose your money in a hurry, and that is a fear we have on this with this technology. We, too, would be more than happy to work with him in the coming months as the legislature adjourns and perhaps they rework some of this bill to alleviate our concerns going forward. So we do, I know it's informational today, but we do oppose this bill in its current form.
Thank you, Mr. Grassel. Are there any questions for Mr. Grassel? Thanks again. Is there anyone else who desires to be heard with respect to House File 1798? Or any other questions for members? Representative Lean, final couple words?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, working with Mr. Richardson, I became interested in this because it seems to me to be a common sense reform to get this game in line with technology that's out there right now. Mr. Richardson, I think I can speak for him when I say this. We have no intentions of expanding gaming with this. We have no intentions of creating new games with this. All it really is bringing new technology to an existing game and allowing the Gambling Control Board to provide more regulation of these existing games. This is and always will be charitable gaming. We're not looking to put slot machines in bars. One of the concerns from the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association was that it would move toward the player-activated games, and we have talked about language that would completely prevent that. So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I do appreciate your time on this, and even though it is an informational hearing, I certainly appreciate us to have the conversation.
Thank you, Representative Lean. Thank you, Mr. Richardson, and thank you to all the testifiers that joined us this afternoon. With that, next up is House File 3807, an excellent bill.
While we're waiting for Representative Atkins, and I don't know who else that is, but Representative Atkins to get ready, we have a bill that we laid on the table earlier. It was a Senate file of Representative Lunan's, and just to clean it up, I don't know what's going to happen with it, but we're going to send that one to the General Register, and they can keep working on it from there. One second, Representative Atkins. Representative Lunan, are you?
I'm with the bill.
Representative Lunan will move House File, Senate File 1523, which we laid on the table, I think, 2 weeks ago, and move that we'll just send that to the General Register.
Yep.
Any questions about that, members? Representative Halverson.
Mr. Chair, can you just remind us the topic of the bill?
Yeah, thank you, Representative Halverson. Representative Lunan, can you run us through that bill?
There was the Commerce Bill with the no-fault provisions in it.
I think this was the one referring with deal with stop loss. Representative Smith, did you have a comment on that one?
Pardon me? I can't see.
Representative Smith?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I hope that the department continues to work with Representative Lunan in regard to the stop loss provision.
And I think it's fair to say that this bill is not going to be heard on the General Register until it gets more work done. But this is likely our last committee hearing for the year, so we're just going to send it to the General Register and let folks keep working on it. Representative Halverson, is that? Thank you. With that, all those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
Aye.
No. Thank you, members. The motion does prevail. Senate File 1523 is sent to the General Register. With that, Representative Atkins, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move House File 3807 to the General Register, please. And with that, Mr. Chairman, this is about the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And if it was solely dumb, it wouldn't be so scary. But it's also dangerous. What it is a cell phone case that is shaped like a gun. I'm joined here by Representative Schoen as well as Chief Schnell. Representative Schoen and I had the same idea for this legislation at about the same time. I ended up as the chief author, but I would say that Representative Schoen and I both have equal ownership of it. I mostly want you to hear from Chief Schnell from the Maplewood Police Department. It's one thing to be stupid and endanger yourself. It's entirely another to endanger police officers and bystanders around you. And if a teenager pulls out something like this cell phone case shaped like a gun, I defy you to know instantly what it is. It looks like, and there's multiple pictures that I can share with you. Here's another one. This is in somebody's back pocket. It looks identical to a gun in a back pocket. Same with this device. Here's just a color version of an earlier photo. But all of these, if you put them in somebody's back pocket, or they pull them out all of a sudden, they look like a gun, which instantly brings fear into people around them. And so that the purpose of the law is, and frankly, Representative Schoen and I, we agreed last summer, we didn't want to move forward with it if they weren't going to be sold. We contacted Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, contacted Minnesota retailers in hopes that this device just simply would not be sold in Minnesota. We hope that would be the case, and then within the last few months, there's been plenty of them sold. This has got bipartisan authorship. It came through the Senate with Senator Latz as the chief author. Senators Ingebrigtsen, Hall, Newman, and Limmer as co-authors. passed unanimously, voice vote in the Senate. I know that's not that important to this group, but it's got sound support on both sides of the aisle. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to my co-author, which is Representative Schoen, and then to Chief Schnell as well.
Before you start, Representative Schoen, then we've got a question coming as when you gentlemen are done. Representative Schoen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and it's great to be here in the last hearing for Commerce of the year. Wow. Well, you know, I think first what I want to say is that what also highlights it, I think we've all seen in the news that there's a manufacturer in Minnesota who's making a cell phone or a gun design that looks like a working gun that looks like a cell phone. And that's not what we're here to talk about today. I know that's going to spark a lot of other conversation, and Representative Atkins and I both agree that that's not the discussion we want to have. We're not here to say we want to ban that. We're here simply to talk about this device that we talked about last year, and so that's important. I think having that crossover between policy and actually doing the job of a police officer, I think everybody can understand the difficulties we face on the street every day in every community. And that's not just an urban community, a suburban community, but it's also in the rural communities as well. And this is just common sense. And there are some things that just come through that kind of shock the conscience of, why would you do that? This just doesn't make sense. If I'm walking down the street in Little Falls and I'm going to encounter a police officer and answer my phone at the same time he or she wants to talk to me, why would we want to create a situation that we intentionally create devastating consequences? Because for that officer to find out after they've shot someone that's holding a cell phone is as devastating as anything you could ever imagine. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schoen. Chief Schnell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Paul Schnell. I'm the Chief of Police for the City of Maplewood, and I'm testifying today on behalf of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. As Representative Schoen indicated, law enforcement faces tremendous challenges at the present time. As a profession, considerable efforts are underway to build and maintain public trust. This cell phone case creates an utterly no-win situation for us. No-win in the way of the interest of community safety. No win in the reduction of fear that we hope to achieve and have in our communities. These no wins are the best case scenarios. The worst case scenarios is the potential loss of life when an officer finds him or herself in the position of having to make that split second decision, oftentimes in under high stress conditions as well as low light conditions. Even in cases of lawful search, there is nothing that creates a sense of anxiety than conducting a search on someone and finding or feeling a device you believe to be a gun. This device will result in considerable calls for service because communities are more fearful. These devices will end up in our schools. They will end up in workplaces. Further diminishing the sense of public safety that we all seek to achieve. At the end of the day, we would ask and encourage you to support House File Number 3807, as we believe if this does not go into effect, these cases do create a no-win situation with erodes the safety of our communities.
Thank you, Chief Schnell. We do have a couple of questions, Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question is, so it sounds like these devices have been sold now in Minnesota, so what happens to people who currently are in possession of these devices in our state?
Anybody, Representative Atkins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Halverson. We were hoping that they simply would not be sold, and we contacted the retailers and business community. They didn't intend to sell them, but they've been working their way into their state through mail order via over the internet. This would make it a crime to own those, and to own them, to manufacture them, to sell them here in Minnesota. And I don't care if you spent $9.99 to buy one already. They're stupid, and they shouldn't be out on the streets.
Representative Halverson, you good?
I think maybe we would have to have a little bit more clarity on what people should do with them if they do become illegal. Just a thought. And the other comment I actually wanted to make was I was glad that Representative Schoen brought up the the new trend of the cell phone, the gun that looks like a cell phone. It's funny how our policies can't seem to keep up with the marketplace and ideas, bad ideas that seem to be coming out. But I know if my child saw this, he'd think it was a toy. There's a certain generation that doesn't think this is a phone at all. It's a toy and you play with it. He plays his games on it. And so it's very interesting that we are, before we even get this bill passed, we're heading into a whole new world of devices that are set up to make us less safe.
Representative Halverson, I agree with your comments that I think in a lot of areas we can't legislate as fast as technology changes. That's why we're getting rid of landlines.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Schoen.
I think that one piece of Representative Halverson's question, I'm going to just speak for Chief Schnell real quick, that if anybody ends up having one of these and we do pass the law, that any of our local police departments will allow you to drop them off and we'll gladly throw them in our trash for you.
Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, last year in session, we passed into law the ability that you can, if you pull me over and for a ticket or whatever, I can demonstrate that I have insurance to you by showing you my phone. And I see that's just gas on this fire, that you have an officer pulling someone over, they want to see the proof of insurance, and someone just pulls that phone out real quick. This is a bad situation, and so we've got to deal with this.
Representative Cresha.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing the bill up. I'm just trying to think through the pragmatic side of this. First offense, second offense, I mean, you pull someone over, you see them sitting on the seat. I mean, what's this do to you as law enforcement? Someone walking down the street, or you frisk them, my gosh, this is a whole other world.
Chief Schnell.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think this will create problems. I mean, we know that we get calls today when people suspect or see young people with guns. This will result in responses. And then you talk about the erosion of trust. When officers are rightfully trying to investigate a concern in the community, when they see this out of somebody's back pocket or situations like that, these are the places where I think people begin to question what's law enforcement trying to do. Is simply a cell phone case. But I think we all recognize that that officers and others really, I think, find themselves in a position where they need to take and recognize these threats as real. Ultimately, you know, while we're in a day and age where we're encouraging officers to slow down and really be mindful about the use of force, at the same time, when you see something that appears to be a gun, there has to be a response and a reaction to that in order to defend and protect yourself.
Thank you, Chief Schnell. Representative Cresha.
And thank you for that. And just a quick follow-up, I mean, as you go forward, and I hope this moves forward, and you may have already done this, but reach out to the schools. See if we can get these collected in the schools and before something stupid happens.
Thank you, Representative Cresha. Members, any other questions?
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to acknowledge what Representative Lunan said. If I'm off-duty and I happen to have my off-duty gun in my glove box, where I would have to open it for the officer if I was stopped or whatever, just in case, hypothetically, that might have happened. I actually get nervous because I flat out, I mean, I make it very clear, I want you to know I'm an off-duty cop and that I'm going to open this glove box and there's going to be a gun and a badge in there. And they're going to be like, okay, that's fine, but I still get nervous about it because I know I've been in that same situation where I've stopped a car and somebody opens up the glove box. I've had a situation where a carload of four young gentlemen opened the glove box and there's four pistols in that glove box. And it was because they were running around town shooting airsoft guns. And they look like real guns. But if I see that diamond etching on a piece of metal, or you know what I'm talking, if you know anything about guns and you know what the handle of a gun looks like, you know immediately what you're seeing. And it brings you to a level that you can't even imagine. And you go into protect mode because, you know what I think about? I think about my two kids. I think, I'm going home tonight. You don't get to take me. And we don't need a situation to arise where an officer is put in that position because somebody panics, because when our emotions overtake and we don't think clearly, and they're like, no, 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 it's a cell phone, I promise, and they start grabbing for it. That's already too late. So the best that we can do to prevent this, we'd really appreciate your help.
Thank you, Representative Schoen. Representative O'Driscoll has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, just a couple of questions relative to the bill. There are no criminal penalties involved in here or civil penalties that are involved. Does that, you don't, you shouldn't have it. Thank you, I'll take that from you, dispose of it. What's our mechanism here?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Driscoll. And I'll defer to staff, but I think it's the default penalty, which would be a misdemeanor.
Ms. Pompeo?
Chair and Representative, they recently changed the default penalty, so this would be a petty misdemeanor if no penalty is directly associated, and that would have a fine up to $300.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then, if I heard correctly, and help me with this, this is going to the General Register. Should it then go through public safety because it does have penalties associated with it? Just wanting to make sure that we do this right.
Representative Atkins?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Driscoll, it didn't in the Senate. I think if we start down that path, virtually every bill that we pass in this body would probably find its way through public safety. But I'll go wherever you want me to. And I would hope that we'd find good support wherever, whatever committee.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Atkins, it is not my intention to put more obstacles in the way of what I think is reasonable legislation. I just know that on the House floor, sometimes folks talk about bills should be referred to different committees and stuff. I just want to avoid that kind of an issue for you here today, if that's at all possible.
Well, Representative O'Driscoll and committee members, we're going to send this to the General Register. I will talk to Representative Cornish. If he has an interest, we'll have him talk with the author, but I don't think it needs to go there, but that was a good comment, and it's always nice to be cognizant of where it might have to go. With that, Representative Representative Scott, sorry.
Just to the office, have you had a conversation with Representative Cornish about this bill at all?
Thank you. Representative Chair, and thank you, Representative Scott. Actually, my hope had been to not even have to introduce this bill, so we introduced it late last week. When the Senate met deadline and when we found out that there have been literally hundreds or thousands of these things sold, it's my intention not just to talk to Chair Cornish, but hopefully to get him on the bill and to assure him that the issue has been brought up about the flip side of this and that you know, there may be amendments about banning certain guns and so forth. That's not, as Representative Schoen indicated, that's not our intention. I just haven't had a chance to talk to Chair Cornish, but I'm hoping that he'll actually co-sponsor the bill with us. And I'd invite others to do so as well, please.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Excuse me. Any other questions, members? Anybody else in the audience want to speak for or against this bill? Seeing none, with that, Representative Atkins, we'll give you the final word.
Thank you. I'd renew my motion.
Representative Atkins renews his motion that House File 3807 be referred to the General Register. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Chief Schnell, thank you for coming. With that, members, I think we are at, I believe this is our last committee hearing. You never know, something else might come up. But I want to do a couple of things before we adjourn. One, Representative Atkins had the gavel briefly today. He had two stints as the chair of this committee and is not going to be running for re-election, so won't be back next year. But Representative Atkins, on behalf of the committee, thank you for your years of service and your mostly fair committee chairmanship.
Is the bread then coming my way, Mr. Chairman? Is that...
I can't hear. I don't think your mic is working.
Thank you, though.
With that, members, thank you very much for your attention, your attendance. It was, a reasonably fun year. We tried to do that. To the extent we had problems with the committee, those were pretty much all my fault. When we start looking at the people that make all of us look good, we're missing a few people today, but we have Larry and Chris and Nancy and Chelsea that make us all look smart with all of the information that they give us about the bills. And then, of course, we couldn't do this without John and Karen, who keep the wheels on and keep us here on time and doing everything right. So thank you. Thank you to everybody. And with that, members, I think we're adjourned. Wait, I forgot the pages. Sorry, you guys. Nick, Will, good job. Thank you very much. Now we're adjourned.